Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
It's always a lot of fun when we talk to this Hall of Famer. Of course, Rick Barry, member of the Warriors championship team in 1975. Yesterday was the 45-year anniversary of that championship, the franchise's third championship. Rick Barry joins us here on 95.7 The Game. Rick, I hope you're well. Hope you're doing well. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, thank you. I hope everybody else out there is doing as well as possible under these crazy circumstances that exist. But got to play the cards you're dealt, as they say.
No doubt about it, man. What do you remember about that day 45 years ago when you guys won that championship in 1975, you and that great Warriors team?
Well, it's interesting. Actually, we just kind of communicated all the guys that are still alive here, sending some texts and emails back and forth. And I got something, Charles Dudley talking about, well, I just happened to be a small part of that team. And I wrote back to him and in fact to all those guys. I said, look, you guys, we won as a team. We didn't win because of any one individual. We won because we made a commitment to playing the game the right way, and everybody was a major contributor to the success of that team. And that's what made it so very special. We were like a family. We went out to dinner together. We went to movies together. We just had a great time. And probably the best thing about what we did, which is today the most overlooked championship accomplishment in the history of major sports in this country. It's just unbelievable that you turn around and you see all of these different features and documentaries and everything being talking about all these things that have happened in the world of sports. You know, you just had the Last Dance, and they had the thing about Dwayne Wade, and then they had the thing now Lance Armstrong's on there. Everything is on there. And about the Miracle Mets and everything, and the great Jets and all that things that they did. There hasn't been a more dramatic upset and accomplishment in a major sport in this country than what we pulled off. A team that wasn't even supposed to make the playoffs. Not only do we make the playoffs, we wind up winning our division. We wind up winning our conference. And then we're supposed to be in the biggest mismatch in the history of the NBA finals. And we're going to get swept, and we sweep the team that's going to sweep us. Guys, it doesn't get any more dramatic than that. And our team and my teammates have not been given the recognition they justifiably deserve for that. It was an incredible accomplishment on our part. And I got recognition because I was MVP and what have you. But the team itself, it's like it's so overlooked. We didn't get invited to the White House. We weren't on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I mean, I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. So those guys, I told them, you all are an integral part of it. We have the memories. Hopefully we'll get a chance to get back together again, and maybe the Warriors will bring us out again, and we'll all still be around for the 50th anniversary. But I just told those guys, I love them. I appreciate what they did because they gave me, because of their effort and their attitude, the finest, most memorable year in sports in my life.
Rick, I don't know whether to touch base on the last answer or kind of what you just said. So I'm gonna just follow up on what you just said. We had Sam Smith on last week, obviously the sports writer from Chicago, who's involved in the Last Dance. Yeah, he basically came on here and said, without a doubt, he thought you were the most underrated player in basketball history. And the thing I want to ask is, so if that's true, and we look back on that 75 team. Like, is it fair to say, hey, that team might have been the least talented team to ever win it? Like, is that an insult or a compliment, even though it's probably not true?
Well, here's the thing, is that it's probably had a team with the least number of name players on the team. I mean, we had two players who had some experience on that team that contributed to our team, but they were at the end of their careers. That was Jeff Mullins and Bill Bridges, who we picked up for the playoffs. But most teams, if you look back and see, had, you know, two guys who were, you know, all-star performers and guys that were really terrific players. Now they got three guys that are on teams that are unbelievable performers. And we were able to pull it off because we played together. We had the two-headed monster with Clifford Ray starting and George Johnson coming off the bench between them. In fact, I was just talking to Clifford the other day. He was just over visiting with me. And the numbers between them, I think it was something like maybe 18 points, 18 rebounds and 15 points a game between the two of them. You know, one was the physical guy to jump out and guard the guards, block people, play physical, and George, the finesse guy, blocking shots. So, and then we had guys that people never even heard of. And we had two rookies who were an integral part of the success of that team. How often does that happen in today's world? Jamal Wilkes, who was Keith at the time. Jamal, you know, was rookie of the year. And Phil Smith came on and got better and better as the season went on and eventually became an all-star player. But that year, we didn't have big-name players. So, yeah, you could probably make a point. Somebody could say it, and I don't know. It might be an insult to them, and it shouldn't be an insult. I mean, because they were really good players. We were a really good basketball team. We weren't one of the greatest teams ever and all, but we did what we had to do to win. And unfortunately, they screwed around with the chemistry of the team and got rid of Butch Beard the next year, because I think we would have won if Butch had been on our team the next year. I think we would have won the championship 2 years in a row.
Rick, you were a bad dude, man. You were a bad dude. And like you said, you were MVP of a team that swept the Washington Bullets that had won 60 games that year. And Bonte and Steiny and I go back and forth on, if you were part of a championship team, what would you do, you know, with the ring? Would you wear it every day? And I kind of kid with them, but I'm not kidding. I would wear it every day if I had that opportunity like you did. If you don't mind, do you ever reflect? Do you wear your ring? Do you go in and look at it and think of that 75 season? Where's the ring now?
On my finger.
I love it, Rick. That's the answer I want to hear, Rick.
No,
I love it.
It's the right way. I have a Hall of Fame ring. I have an NBA Top 50 ring. I never wear them. You play the game to win championships. It's a team. It's not about individual accolades and awards. And so, yeah, it's meaningful. I'm very appreciative of the fact that I was chosen as one of the top 50 players. I'm very appreciative that I was chosen and elected to go into the Basketball Hall of Fame. But I equate it this way. The awards that you get, I mean, I had steal championships and free throw championships and scoring championships and MVP of an all-star game, whatever. So all of those things, it's kind of like having a cake, right? You have candles and you have cherries and you have the decorations and all that stuff. Well, I have a lot of that stuff. But the thing is, a lot of guys don't have the cake. The cake is the championship. So how do all of those things look sitting on a plate with no cake? They don't
look
good.
Gotcha.
Great point. Rick Barry here on 95.7 The Game, the Hall of Famer, also a member of that 1975 NBA Championship Golden State Warriors squad. It was a 45-year anniversary yesterday. Rick, you brought up The Last Dance. I want to get your thoughts on The Last Dance because we talked about it over the last 5 weeks, and obviously it was going to be centered on Michael Jordan. Do you look at Jordan any differently after the documentary, or what was your biggest takeaway from that documentary, Rick?
Well, the biggest takeaway for me is that how they were able to get access and that they agreed to let them follow him around like that. Even, heck, I never knew Dennis Rodman took off for 2 days to go to Vegas and they let the film crew go with him. So I was kind of shocked, actually, by that. I mean, guys, if somebody had, what a great idea for somebody to do that. I mean, it turned out to be genius from a production standpoint. I read a lot of stuff, and I have a question for you guys. I'm curious if Sam said anything, because I know I read some stuff from Sam talking about that a lot of things happened. He felt there were a lot of things that were not the truths that were brought up in the documentary, that actually lies that were told. And I was wondering if he gave you any more insight or was able to reveal any of those things, or did he kind of keep that secret?
No, he basically said, Rick, that Michael Jordan lied, specifically when Jordan was saying that Krause and Reinsdorf could have kept that team together. And what Sam was saying was nobody tells Michael Jordan to leave. You know, he was there. It was over. Pippen had checked out mentally. Rodman was basically at the end of his career. And that Michaels kind of revised history there by putting the onus on Krause when really Michael was very much involved in that breakup too.
Yeah. All right. Well, I, you know, he might, he's obviously, he was the beat writer and they're covering all that stuff with no more than that. And I read some other stuff and there from Horace, you know, Grant was talking about some things and he was friends with Scotty. And I know Scotty wasn't pleased with it, but to his credit, he just kept his mouth shut about it. I mean, he wasn't portrayed in the greatest way ever, but I think that came from not going in the game. I mean, come on. I mean, how do you portray that any other way? I mean, that was probably the worst decision he ever made in his basketball career, not going in the game for the last play. But then he also sucked it up and you know, played when a lot of players probably never would have even gotten him back out on the court. He played with the issue that he had with the back and all. So, you know, a great player, no question about it. And again, you know, Michael, here's the thing. That's another pointed out. Did Michael win championships before he got Scottie? Did Shaq win championships before he got Kobe? Did he win championships by himself? I mean, come on. That's the thing I'm talking about. You bring it back up before. I tell people, I says, tell me another team that won that didn't have two all-star, you know, veteran players on their team.
Yeah. Rick Barry joining us, former Golden State Warrior, member of the Hall of Fame, one of the top 50 players of all time. All right, Rick, you said you were talking about Scottie Pippen and a bad decision that he, you know, didn't go back into that game. I'm just going to lay it on the line. You know what people say about Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals in 1976. I actually went back and watched.
Say, no, I'm going to cut you off right there because I know what you're getting into. It was what people say. It was with Al McCoy, the radio broadcaster for the freaking Suns, said that I quit on the team and I was mad because they didn't come to my defense when I got in a fight. But that's the most ridiculous thing. I mean, and give up and quit. That's, if anybody knows me, they have to know that somebody has to be a moron to make a statement like that.
Well, and Rick, I'm not disagreeing with you. I went back and just, like, looked at, you know, the internet and stuff. So, well, that's not right if people think that happened in Game 7.
There is no way in the world that I would get mad at my teammates. What I did and what happened is that because I didn't shoot the ball every time I got it, we gave a game away and they changed the rule. The rule in basketball got changed because of that playoff series. Do you know that? One rule?
Tell me.
No, what rule?
Okay. So we're playing. They come down and they get an opportunity. They come down and they score. We have the ball. Give you inbound. I'm running down to get the ball. They have to foul me. Okay. We're ahead in this game in Phoenix. So they're going to have to foul me. And if they foul me, I'm going to make my free throws. Game's over because there's no 3-point shot then. So for whatever reason, the timeout is called. So we go to the timeout. When we come out of the huddle, the play was set to get the ball to me, which we do. They intentionally went off and fouled with only second, you know, less than a minute to play in the game, and fouled one of my teammates intentionally to put him at the free throw line. And the rule came in the next year and all that you cannot intentionally foul off the ball in the last 2 minutes. And it cost us the game because, unfortunately, they missed the free throw. They came down. Keith Erickson hit a shot from the outside. Now we're down one. We run a play. Not like I remember this. We come down and we run a play. I run off a triple staggered screen with Clifford Ray setting the last screen for me. Started on the right side in front of the Phoenix bench. Came off the screen. Ran off another one. Ran like the other guy into the, off of Clifford. Came off. Was wide open. And unfortunately, Phil saw Jamal open in the corner. And I didn't get the ball, and he passed to the corner, and Jamal had the shot tipped by Gar Hurd, and we wound up losing that game. That's a game we gave away. We win that game, we go to the finals. There's no way Boston beats us in the finals that year. They shouldn't have beaten Phoenix. They got screwed in one of the worst displays of officiating I've seen in my life when Richie Powers said, because I broadcast that series.
Yeah, I watched that one too, Rick.
They just had that game on, Rick, on NBA TV about an hour ago.
Paul Silas comes right in front of Richie Powers and asks for a timeout. And he doesn't give him the timeout. If he had, it was a technical foul.
Oh, right.
No timeouts. Paul Westphal could have gone, shot a free throw, and they could have won that game. Instead, they wound up winning in a triple overtime game. It was absolutely ludicrous. In fact, Mindy Rudolph, who's no longer with us, was in the booth working with me in the broadcast booth. And I turned to him. He said, I think he made the right play. I said, are you kidding? Your job is to officiate the game. If a player asks for a timeout, who are you to decide whether you're going to give it to him or not? Your job is to give him the timeout. Right. I chose to ignore his request. What the hell is that? He should have been suspended from the league.
Rick,
that's the kind of stuff that happens. And so right. What happened is when I, just to get back to it, I should have been the SOB pain in the ass guy that supposedly I was supposed to be. I should have demanded the ball in game seven. If I had to do her again, I probably would. But when I got it, I did things. The last thing I wanted to do, we were doing too much of one-on-one stuff. I didn't get the ball as many times as I should have gotten it.
No.
That's one of the reasons why I say that losing Butch Beer that year, when the general manager, who's no longer with us, Dick Burtley, got rid of him because he didn't want to deal with his wife at the time. Seriously, this is a true story. Did not want to deal with his wife and traded Butch away, who was a really steady, steady guy, way better player than people realize. But I can guarantee you, with Butch playing point guard, I would never go 3-4 minutes or so without the ball in my hands. And so that happened. And then we got down, and we were trying to make the comeback, and we were making a comeback. And I ran a pick-and-roll play with Clifford Ray and wound up not going through, and Alvin Adams went down and got a dunk and sealed the game. If that play works, we could easily have won that game. But we should have won the game before. There should have never been a game seven. And we wound up giving away a game down in Phoenix. So I remember that stuff like it was yesterday. And I was really mad at Al McCoy. And I saw him recently, a few years ago. And I said, why the hell did you say that? I said, what is wrong with you making a comment like that about me? How in the world do you know what's going on in my mind? And how could you possibly think, if you knew me as a person and my competitive nature, that I would ever not give my best effort and try to win without having to, you know, do something illegal? I'm going to do everything I can to win a game, especially to have a chance to go back and be back-to-back champions that hadn't been done since the old Celtic game. The Celtics.
What did he say?
When they won all those titles? Come on.
What did he say? What did he say?
He didn't say, I don't know. What is he going to say? I mean, he said it. The damage was done. You know?
Right.
People pick up. But just like the same thing people pick up on all this garbage. You know, they use all the stuff from me to make me look like I'm a terrible guy. I was no harder on my team, not even near as hard on my teammates as Michael Jordan was. And he's getting praise for being that way. And I was vilified for doing it. And I wasn't even anywhere near that bad doing stuff of that nature. I mean, it's just it's crazy. Like, they use the stuff Mike Dunleavy, my teammate from the Rockets, said, well, if Rick Barry went to the UN, he'd start World War III. But before that, what he said, Rick Barry's one of the nicest guys to do anything in the world for you. But if you send it to the world, so they left that beginning part out. And so then Billy Paulson, who was my friend, who was a funny guy doing stuff and everything, he said, yeah, half the guys in the league hate Rick. The other guy, no, don't like Rick. The other half hate him. I mean, so that's the stuff that these guys use all the time and make it as if these things were really serious to turn me into some kind of a villain. And it really, I have to admit, it really hurts my feelings because I know who I am as a person and people know me who I am. And all I can tell people is that you would want me as a friend. I'm a great friend.
Well, Rick, you know, do you think?
Rick, I know that for a fact because you know who says that? R.C. Davis says that about you, to tell you the God's honest truth.
RC was great. I know one of my other producers doing stuff. I'm doing my podcast, Warriors 24, which you can listen to at times. I do it with Cyrus Satches. Cyrus was one of my producers. I mean, if I was such a bad person, then why am I still friends with all these people?
Right.
Rick, break.
Rick, real quick, you say all that. Do you think those false narratives kept you from being an NBA head coach?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, they were all afraid of me. You know, we couldn't control them. And they probably were right about that. They wouldn't have been able to control me. Because if you're going to hire me to do a job, I'm going to do the job in the best way I think that it should be done. And if it doesn't work, in fact, I was willing, if they were to give me a chance. I was told so many times that I never had a legitimate interview to get a job. And people asked me, Warriors, is Rick going to get a chance? Oh, yeah. No, I never got a legitimate interview. And people said things about me like Rick Adelman. I mean, not Rick Adelman, but who was it? The general manager when he was there.
Dave Twardzik.
Dave Twardzik said, Rick Barry, you know, he said something so hard. He was horrible about me. Dave Twardzik has never spent 5 minutes in his life alone with me. How the hell does he know me? I mean, it was a big mistake on their part. I think I could have helped that team out back in those old days because I would have brought in Clifford as my big man's coach, one of the best big men's coaches, one of the worst treated big men's coach in the history of the NBA. Amazing what he had done. I had talked to Norm Van Leer. I would have brought Norm Van Leer to be one of my guys to work with the guards. I mean, I had talked to people that I had great respect for, who I knew knew how to play the game the right way, who would be able to instill the right attitude in the players that I would have. And I think, and plus from the standpoint, just from a PR standpoint and all, I mean, wouldn't that have been a good thing? I mean, and you know what? They never give credit. If I was the general manager and doing stuff, the coach I'm going to hire, I'm going to hire a coach who not only is a coach that is a good coach or understands the game, I'm going to hunt somebody who can deal with the press. Because you're the most important conduit between a team and their fan base is your head coach. Who's the guy that has the radio show? Who's the guy that's on television? Who's the guy that gets interviewed all the time? Don't you want to have somebody who can handle that role really well?
Yeah.
Rick, I mean, that's fire. And I got to tell you, I got two things for you. One, real quick, I used to call local Bay Area talk shows and lobby for you to be the next coach of the Golden State Warriors. So there's that. But I wanted to ask you this. Last week, ESPN released a top five all-time starters for each organization. And we took calls because you were left off. They had Steph, Clay, KD, Draymond, and Wilt. But after the cake analogy, I don't want to speak for you. What did you think when you saw that list and your name was omitted? Because a lot of people called the show and a lot of Rick Barry fans were mad that your name wasn't on that list. Does that bother you at all?
Everybody is entitled to their opinion. Right. And that's all it is. Yeah. It's the opinion of some people. And for whoever made those decisions at all, there's other people who obviously might not have made the same choices. You know, it is what it is. I mean, I know who I am. I knew who I was as a player. And that doesn't change. I mean, who cares? I mean, bottom line is I have my championship ring sitting on my finger that I'm looking at right now. It's worn down quite a bit. But I don't understand sometimes, to be honest with you, some guys who have championship rings don't wear them. When I see them, I say, why aren't you wearing your championship ring? I mean, it's a very rare thing. There's very few people in the world that have one of these. You know, the Warriors one that they have, it's got a few more diamonds. I have a picture that I show people all the time with Joe Lacob's ring and my ring, and I show them the difference between the two rings. And I really believe, I think it was incredibly expensive. I think the Warriors ring that they had was probably worth more, at least more than two times as much as I made in my first 2 years playing basketball. I mean, was just amazing. But it was an amazing ring and a great accomplishment for them. But, yeah, it's a different world today. And, you know, things of that nature. I mean, there's so many things that happen. I didn't even know until watching something. I watched the Jordan thing. I mean, when they brought up the thing of who else, you know, he led the thing. Michael beat me in the six-game series for an average by 1 point to have the best average ever in a championship six-game series. And he played in a triple overtime game that I never played in an overtime game, and he scored 10 points in those triple overtimes. So he beats me by 1 point. So it barely was more than mine, that it lasted for decades. And then I find out after somebody goes, well, you realize then I have the highest scoring average in the history of the NBA in the NBA finals, which is like 36 points a game. And Michael was second, like at 32. I never knew that. See, right. I never paid any attention to any of that stuff. There's so many things that pop up right. at times over the years in USA Today. They put stuff, you know, this, that. And people call me, what'd you think? I say, oh, that's amazing. I didn't even know that. I'll tell you, the one I am proudest of and doesn't get brought up very often, I think I still have the record for the most assists by a forward in an NBA game. And it was 19 assists I got, and I did it in Chicago. So I always joke about it and say, well, I probably had 20 or more because I know they probably screwed me out of a couple in Chicago.
Hey, Rick, before we get you out of here this Friday, we're going to do it all day long. The Mount Rushmore of greatest moments in Bay Area history. And we've got a ton of moments here off the top of your head, because as you mentioned, you were in the media, you're on TV out here in the Bay Area. Of course, you played with the Warriors for so long. I know where you're going to go, but give us a couple great moments in Bay Area history in your mind.
Well, the A's that were dominant, and I think the biggest thing was it was for the East Bay, actually, because in one calendar year, the Raiders won the Super Bowl, the A's won the World Series, and we won the NBA championship within a 12-month period of time. I mean, where else has that happened very often? Not very often. I think it might have happened once, maybe in New York. I'm not sure. But, yeah, that was probably has to be at the top of the list as far as accomplishments go. To have three teams, well, and they were all basically at that time, they're all in Oakland, of all things. None of them was in San Francisco. It wasn't the 49ers at all. And, of course, the great 49ers teams that they had, you know, with Montana and all those guys, and the great run that they have were remarkable. No question about that. Then the Giants, you know, some of the Giants with their championship, because I was always a big Giants fan. I mean, that's why I wore number 24, because of my hero, Willie Mays. So some of the great Giants you know, championships that they had. And I think a lot of it comes down to, but I think nothing tops what we did. I mean, there isn't anything that tops that in the major sports. Come on. I mean, there's nobody's been as big an underdog as we were and pulled off the biggest upset in the finals of a major sport. It's just incredible to me. I feel so badly for my teammates to not have had that kind of recognition, for people to know who they were as people, the sacrifices they made, the camaraderie that we had. It was like a college atmosphere, cheering for everybody, pulling for everybody, whether a guy was in for 2 minutes. In fact, if you look at game number seven, I always joke, Al Addo's greatest decision and one of his greatest coaching decisions ever that he made was to take me out of the game in the third quarter of the seventh game against Chicago in the championship. Think about that. What coach would have the guts to take out his leading scorer, the top player, and take him out and leave him out for an extended period of time? And I was stinking up the joint. It was the best thing he could have done. In fact, Pat Riley needed to have done that when he was coaching the Knicks, and he didn't let John Starks, if you remember, self-destructed right there. He needed to take Starks out of the game and give him a chance to, you know, compose himself. And so that was a great move. But what my team did was just so amazing. But on the bench during that run, my teammates held Chicago scoreless for 7.5 minutes. And who was in the game? Two of our starters. I'm out of the game, and Clifford Ray, the starting center, is out of the game. And who are the guys cheering and all? Clifford's up. I'm there. We're cheering for them as much. I mean, because that's what we were. We were a team. We didn't care who got it done. Just get it done.
Yeah. Rick Barry here on 95.7 The Game. Great, great stuff. Rick, the 45-year anniversary was yesterday of your 1975 and you and your teammates' 1975 championship run out here in Oakland, California. Rick, that was so much fun. Take care, my friend, and stay safe out there.
All right, the same to you and all your listeners. God bless. Bye.
You too. Rick Barry here on 95.7 The Game. We'll recap that. 888-7-9-5-7-0. We'll dissect that interview. A lot was said by Rick Barry right here on 95.7 The Game, and that's what's coming up here on 95.7 The Game, sponsored by the California Motorcycle Safety Program. As we start to get back on the road again, now is the perfect time to think about taking a California motorcyclist safety course. Whether it's your first time on a motorcycle or if you've ridden before, anyone can benefit from learning the latest skills and techniques. Visit CaliforniaMotorcyclist.com to learn more.
Now, back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
I used to call local Bay Area talk shows and lobby for you to be the next coach of the Golden State Warriors. So there's that. You guys.
Goo? Oh,
man. I thought to myself after I let it go, like, uh-oh. Yeah.
Well, he's also a bad man, too. Yeah, Guru had to remind Rick Barry that Rick was a bad man.
bad man. A bad man.
Hey, but how about also, Rick wearing the ring, Bonte? He got it on now, baby.
Rick is old school. He was the best player on the team. Of course he should wear a ring. We're talking about guys who don't. Guys like Matt Barnes. By the way, did you see Matt Barnes?
I did see Matt Barnes saying he's not going to wear his ring. Because he didn't play much in the NBA Finals.
Wow,
feels like he didn't contribute at all to that 2017 roster. And
it's called having self-respect, Guru.
I'm with you, Bonte. I don't like that either, man. You got a jersey. It's part of the team. And then real quick, half the time it's not about the star. The other time it's about unity, camaraderie. I mean, okay, Matt, I get what you're saying. You weren't Steph, but you're on the team, man. Enjoy the win. Enjoy the ring.
He helped them in the regular season when KD got hurt. KD got hurt in D.C. when Martin Gortat pushed Zaza Pachulia into his knee. Matt Barnes came in after Jose Calderon was signed for, 45 minutes? And then Matt Barnes steps up, becomes a warrior, helps out the Warriors. Matt, wear your ring, man. You're a champion. Come on.
It's not like you're doing interviews saying it was my team. You know, you ain't doing Jordan stuff.
why do you guys have a problem with a guy not wanting to wear a ring?
I don't have a problem with it. Yeah. It's just like you come out and say, like, I don't even have the ring. It's in Raymond Ritter's office. Like, come on, man. Take the ring home. Put it in the safe. You don't have to wear it, but that's your ring.
We do this a lot. Should Jose Calderon wear his ring?
Well, that's a different story. He never suited up and played a game.
Yeah,
Never played
would
a game.
Would you lose respect for him if he did, fellas?
I would. Yes.
I would. For
yes,
Jose
I would.
Calderon? Yeah. Never attended one practice with the Warriors. Never attended one practice. At least Matt Barnes played in games and practiced and played in some playoff games. Calderon signed for 5 minutes. What did he get, $100,000 or something? What did the Warriors pay him? Or forget what they paid him.
Take the money and run. Yeah.
Take the money and run. But you do not. No, if you're Jose Calderon, you do not wear the ring. Matt Barnes should at least take it home. Don't you agree, Steiny? Leave it in the Raymond Ritter's office?
Yeah, I would take it. I'm not saying I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't, I wouldn't wear it. But I'm not a ring guy.
There would be no pride.
Anyway. Yeah. I don't like rings, tell you the truth.
Like, real quick, like Steiny, Let's say I've never met you in my life. We got a mutual friend. His name's Bonte Hill. You're over Bonte's house. I get there. I walk in with my ring, my NBA ring. But I was the 12th man on a team. And I'm not saying you're wrong, but it strikes me that you would do the math on the guy that's wearing the ring, bling, bling, to see how good they were for that to piss you off, right? Or the right – the 12th man has as much right to wear the ring as the best player on the team.
Yeah, you're right, he does. But that doesn't mean I can't think a certain way about him.
Right.
Like, if you're the 12th man on your team, you know, it's 10 years later and, you know, you wear your ring all the time. Yeah. It's like, okay, I know what you're about. I get it. Doesn't mean you can't do it. But, you know, that sounds like a desperate guy.
Wow.
Seeking attention. From days gone by where it's over for him. Just move on, dude. That's all.
Yeah. See, I was the PA announcer at City College of San Francisco when they won the state championship in basketball. And Coach LaBall, Coach Aquiso, Coach McNichols, they gave me a ring. They gave me a championship ring. But I will never, ever wear this sucker out because I didn't shoot a free throw. I didn't run any sprints. I didn't shoot a jumper. So I was just an announcer and a beat writer for the school. That's it. Like, but it's nice to have, but I would not, you know, if this was Guru, he'd be wearing it every day. But I'm not wearing this thing out and about. It's on my nightstand. It's been on my nightstand. I appreciate the love. But I would look like a clown wearing it.
But what if Fitz and JB wore their rings that they get
Fitz,
for the team?
JB does not wear his ring. We had him on the show. We interviewed him. He said he would feel foolish wearing a championship ring from 2015 when he didn't score one basket. All he did was announce. He's never worn that ring.
Wow.
Guru's disappointed.
Yeah, we can all differ on it. I just, like I said, just because you wear the ring, you're not fronting. You're not saying you are the badass on campus. Yeah,
you might be, though.
Let
might
me get one of those bad boys.
It's a flex.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, it's a flex. It's a flex, but be careful where you wear it. Be careful where you wear it.
Sounds to me, Goober, like you'd be wearing it for the wrong reasons, tell you the truth.
See, that's my point. There are no wrong reasons.
Yes, there are.
If you were part of the team, there are no wrong reasons.
There are some wrong reasons.
Now, if I go get a Folex diamond chain and it's fake and I wear it to the studio, I'm sending the message like I got money and yada, yada, yada. That's a problem. But not if you're an athlete and you're part of an organization. You get the right to wear that. That's
Guru
just
would have
of course,
his ring.
It's,
he'd be
Guru,
doing all
we don't
the
have
hand
an
gestures.
Argument. Of course, anybody has the right to wear it. That's not the argument. Anybody can wear a ring. I'm just saying who would and who wouldn't, depending on the circumstances.
Yeah. Rick Barry just joined us, the Hall of Famer, of course, member of the 1975 Golden State Warriors championship roster. Yesterday was the 45-year anniversary of that team when they won the championship. He had a quote in there. He said, "The best thing about what we did, which is today the most overlooked championship accomplishment in the history of major sports in this country." He said they were a team. But he said it's the most overlooked championship accomplishment in the history of major sports in this country. That's a strong, strong statement. Strong statement.
Well, I mean, honestly,
I don't know if I agree with it, Steiny.
Well, I mean, here's the thing to me, and I thought about that because Rick said that before. If we're talking about the NCAA tournament, let's say, all right, then it's not. Because it's one and done and teams upset and Villanova beat Georgetown. But for a team, I think they were 42-40 that year. I got to double check. But for a team like that then to win it all is what he said. It would have been like if the We Believe team would have ended up winning a title, essentially.
Right.
And that's the part he might be right about. I'm looking right now. Golden State was 48-34 that year. 48-34. And the Bullets were 60-22. And they swept the Bullets. So,
and I just you probably think the eras have something to do with it too, you know. Social media wasn't around in 75, and I could feel Rick feeling like, you know what, we don't get enough love for this championship. But man, that was long ago. And the only, since, you know, I've been watching the NBA, the only time I saw a team actually win a finals to where I was like, how the hell did that just happen? I'm gonna probably shock you too, is the Dallas Mavericks when they beat LeBron. And I thought, you know, I didn't even think they had a chance. But other than that, it's kind of always went the way of the favorite.
You know, we were talking about – I want to switch these up a little bit here. We were talking about, you know, some of the greatest moments in Bay Area history. And we're going to do that Friday all day long here on 95.7 The Game. But I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast last night with Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes, where he talked about the ring or whatnot and how he doesn't even have the ring. But – they talked about that We Believe team, but I want to ask Steidy this because he was covering that team. Hey, Guru, chime in on it, but they were talking about, you know, when they beat Dallas, and they beat Dallas, you know, because of the feud between Mark Cuban and Don Nelson, and they wanted to beat Dallas because of that. And they get to the Utah series, and Baron Davis said, and Jack brought it up on a podcast, that Don Nelson took his foot off the gas in the Utah series. Like, the Dallas Mavericks series was their championship, and that Don Nelson started doing things that they didn't do on making that playoff run when they went on that great 18-game stretch and to finish out the season and clinch that playoff spot and then to beat the Mavericks. He brought up that Nelson took his foot off the gas and just started doing things that was very unusual. What do you remember about that, Steidy? Because I found that interesting, because they were in those games in Utah, especially games 1 and 2. They blew it in game 4, where Utah had a big game, a big fourth quarter in game number 4. And, of course, game 5, that was all she wrote. But I don't remember Nelson, per se, watching it from afar, taking his foot off the gas pedal.
I mean, the way I would remember it generally is Nelson knew everything and then some about the Mavericks, because he'd been there. Nobody knew, you can make a case, nobody on planet Earth knew how to defend Dirk Nowitzki better than Don Nelson. And he knew all their personnel, top to bottom, and he knew Avery Johnson. And so it stands the reason to me why he would appear to coach harder or be more into the coaching in round one. And then I look at the Utah team, and it's like, well, what the hell can you do with that team? You knew exactly what they're doing. They're running the pick and roll with Boozer and with Deron Williams, and both those guys were problem. Deron Williams could match up with Barron, and the Warriors didn't really have anybody who could match up with Boozer back then. And they had some other good players too, Okur, et cetera. So Utah's a hard team to coach against, because you can't. Like, the one thing Utah's always proven is you can't junk up the game, really. They're too solid for that, and they were back then. I mean, that team was just – look, once they gave away – they essentially gave away both games on the road. But once you give up – once you have a game on the road won, my feeling is, and you lose and you're an underdog, it's over. It's over. You can't come back from that. The Warriors gave away game one, and they they had a chance at game one, and then they gave away game two, and that was it.
Yeah, if I'm Nelson, fellas, you know, and I love Baron Davis just like the rest of us, but if I'm Nelson and I heard that, I think I would take that as a low blow, because like you said, the Warriors balled. They kept the momentum. You make a couple free throws, you can win. I mean, you could even take the series lead. So I never looked, and again, I'm not Baron Davis. This is his reality. He was a part of the team. But from afar, like you mentioned, Bonte, the Warriors were giving Utah all that and some. And to me, it was the series that got away. And you talk about the two games, Stani, that you don't win, the residue where it just follows you. It's like, okay, we had our chances. You know, from my vantage point, it didn't look like Nelson was doing something so blatantly wrong to where years later Baron Davis would have that recollection that Nelson took his finger. You know, Nelson didn't miss free throws. you know, Nelson didn't miss shots or commit fouls. So I thought that Utah series was one the Warriors could have won, and that's why it hurt so much after, you know, knocking off the Mavericks, that they had chances against that Utah team. But damn, BD, those are some strong words.
Yeah, no, strong words. And Stack Jack and Matt Barnes on that Bill Simmons podcast believed that they were going to beat the Spurs. They believed that they matched up well with the San Antonio Spurs.
We talk about
not having an answer for Boozer. Like, they didn't have an answer for Tim Duncan. That would have been a hard, hard series for them against the San Antonio Spurs. I get
they
it.
Would
you
not
got
have
all the guards
San Antonio.
And, yeah. I think
you reminded me last time. It's San Antonio beat Phoenix that year.
They beat Phoenix that year.
Western Conference Finals, yes.
No, they beat Utah. Oh, yeah, they beat Phoenix in the second round. You're right.
Right, so it was the Warriors, Utah, Phoenix. Yeah. And see, what I remember is at one point, that series was 2-2. Phoenix and the Spurs. And at that point, you started thinking, well, hold on. Forget the Spurs. The Warriors were not going to beat the Spurs. It was Phoenix they had a shot at because they had played them that year pretty tough, and they'd actually played them they played them three times before the Warriors had made the trade for Baron Davis. So there was no track record. But the Spurs ended up winning the last two, and the Warriors ended up obviously losing to the Jazz. And it was, I mean, I get what Baron's saying. You know,
how you feeling, Steiny?
I'd laugh. If I see Baron, I would say, Baron, you left. That was your championship too, bro.
Don't go there, Baron.
There was no champagne bottle uncorked that was still had the cork on after that Dallas series. Let's put it that way.
I just remember Mikael Peaches crowd surfing. And Kenny Smith on the TNT was like, all right, come on, that's a bit much. You haven't won a champion. Like, Mikael Peaches is in the crowd at Oracle crowd surfing after first round playoff win. That was some good times there. Speaking of playoffs, man, and we're going to get into this in the next hour pretty heavily. We were talking about Damian Lillard earlier, but the NBA, and I know Guru's a little more optimistic today. He's probably excited, starting to engage how you're feeling about this, but it seems like the NBA is starting to near a return here. There's some playoff proposals, the 16-team playoff proposal, the 20-team group play proposal. Looks like they've honed in on Orlando, Florida as a site. Michelle Roberts, the NBPA executive director, has started to call teams trying to gauge their interest. And she's saying that players are excited. They want to come back and play. Let's just start before we get into the next hour. The 16-team playoff bracket, because that's what hit me yesterday, and I'm looking at it thinking, man, the Lakers would have a cakewalk to the NBA Finals. What do you guys think about that? Doing away with the East and Western Conferences, just doing the best 16 in the playoffs.
Go ahead, Go.
I love it. I love it. And, again, it would be the first of its kind because we always talk about what if – you know, we could see, teams from the East and West battle. So if this is how they started, I think this is the perfect time because, I don't know about the fans or whatnot, but you hear Charles Barkley say basically take this to the bank. The higher-ups at TNT are telling them it's a done deal. I'm all in, and I don't want to go baseball and feel like interleague, but I feel that way in regard to these matchups that we normally would not see to where if we saw a Western Conference team, Steiny, play an Eastern Conference team. I think that adds intrigue, is provocative, and I would be all in for the pandemic year, the playoffs that we finally get, there would be this new twist to it. I think the timing is perfect.
I'm all for anything that can get it going. The NBA apparently saying, nothing, there's still nothing that's been decided. We're still floating a lot of proposals. To me, there's one question. Is it going to be 16 teams or is it going to be 20 teams? Are you going to give those two or three teams, I guess, in the West a crack at making it? I wouldn't, but that's just me. But then you got to figure out how you're going to play games before the playoffs actually start. Because I don't think you're going to want the first game back to be game one of the playoffs. So I think there's still some logistical things to figure out. They have to decide whether they're bringing back no teams, all the teams, I mean, just playoff teams, all the teams, or those 20 16 plus the four, they'll try to, you know, they'll figure out who gets in.
Should they just go ahead and finish the regular season? Because there is, I know in the Eastern Conference, the eighth seed is basically done. But, you know, you think about the Portland Trail Blazers and what Damian Lillard said earlier today on Yahoo Sports with Chris Haynes, their NBA national reporter, basically saying, look, if the games don't matter, I'm not playing. I'll go practice with my team. I'll sit on the bench with my team, but I'm not playing if the games mean nothing. And I want to get – there's a deeper conversation there about what Damian Lillard is saying here, whether or not you think he should play or if he's if he should play or not. But there's a lot of regular season games left, 15 to 17 regular season games. And I do think there is a race out west to be had. Memphis is 3.5 games up. You have the Pelicans. You have the Kings. You have the Blazers in the mix. If you do come back with the regular season, doesn't it feel like you just have to finish out the regular season, whether it's in Vegas or Orlando or wherever? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But then, you know what, you're going to have – I haven't looked at the schedule unbelievably closely, but let's say Memphis has the Warriors two more times, or any Portland does, or any of those. I can't remember off the top of my head. But Curry's not playing. Because they're not making the playoffs, or Curry's going to play 18 minutes a game. So basically, it's an easy win for the team that has to have it, because they're just going to play harder, and they know all they're going to have to do is dot their I's and cross their T's, and they're going to beat the Warriors. Especially, and that's going to be the hardest part. I mean, Draymond Green does not want to come back. See, the problem with a team like the Warriors is they don't want to come back no matter what, and I can't blame them.
So and Steve Kerr said as much. I bet he ain't even playing. He's just coaching. I'm sure he's mentally checked out. Look until next year, this lottery. I just find it hard to, you know, he'd have to downshift and get back to put themselves at risk for games that they know won't help them be a part of a process, the playoffs, that they won't even be a part of. I'm just hoping it's the 20-game format, Bonte and Stani, and it's the Zion factor to where they would get a chance to control their own destiny and keep playing as opposed to coming back and just finishing up the regular season. Because last thing, they're talking about it wouldn't start until, what, the end of July. So we're just embarking on the first week of June, so we still got some time.
No doubt. 888-957-9570. I want to hear from our audience out there. What do you think the NBA should do here? Should they continue with the regular season? Should they go straight to a playoff format? Should they just do the 16-team, top 16-team playoff format? 888-957-9570. I want to hear from the audience here, and we'll dive deeper into this, man. A lot of things on the table when it comes to the NBA, and it's all going to be brought to you by Fremont Bank, still open to serve the community they love with full-service banking, no compromises.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.